Tür geworfen ist.
Welcome, Knob Twiddlers, to another King of the Buttons, a blended disaster from the economy breakfast buffet of envy, a splattering of fromage fray on the supermarket floor of destiny. In a world where an English politician's home is his dungeon, we ponder the inner sanctums of the shed. Guided by an artistic old sage, we also stray into the trappings of fame and small-town sensibilities. We mourn the passing of the great MJ, celebrating his effort in poetry. There's some tracks from way behind the skirting board of the Tinterband, and we stray beyond the ethics of discussion. King of the Buttons. It's a prominent V in a love-shaped recession.
Good evening, I'm Ewan Forking for Digital Rambling International FM. You join me on the banks of the Conservative Party conference where I'm interviewing Conservative MP Jasper Minch. Good evening, Jasper.
Good afternoon.
Jasper, obviously with the general election coming up next year, The general election...
Oh, yes.
Which will have to take place next year. What are your policy priorities going into the election year?
Well, it's an obvious question. Well, I think we're in a position where people don't really know that we're not known. But I'd like to start, very important for me as the shadow for economic policy, Cornwall, and for divine retribution, and also as a shadow of my former self, that I outline some of the key areas for you here and for your listeners.
Well, perhaps you would. I have asked you
yes.
to once.
Well, yes. I think... some of the key policy items are, first of all, we want to scrap around 200 youth clubs and coffee mornings.
Did you say youth clubs?
Yes, youth clubs, yes.
Well, surely youth clubs are a positive thing for society.
Well, we thought so until we went to one.
Well, they're not really designed for adults to go to. They are for youths.
I hope you noticed that we've universally impacted upon the old and the young by banning the coffee morning and the youth club. Do you see?
What have you got against coffee?
Well, these
mornings?
Are hard times. Hard times.
How will banning coffee mornings help the budget?
It doesn't stop there because the other thing that we've decided to be doing with the party leader Trevor Macaroon is that we'll be adding an extra yellow line to parking bays to discourage tramps from speeding, which is very important, particularly in the city of Slough.
Speeding tramps.
Yes.
So this is
yes.
your second policy priority after shutting down youth clubs and coffee mornings.
Yes.
What about...
it's a study. We've done a study on it, you know.
Well, what about the major policy issues facing our next government to do with the economy, problems with delivering health services? What about these sorts of education policy? What about these sorts of issues?
It's a fair question. And to be honest, we put some of those forward. But the... the Commission for Vagrant Velocity came up with this policy and they said it'd be sort of damn good in the Shires, so we went along with it.
Right. How are you going to win over the swing voters?
Well, as you know, I'm a big fan of swinging and of Glenn Miller in particular. So I was thinking one thing that we would try and do is, in fact it's a Zimbabwean model, we'd try and buy votes. To actually directly buy votes, because lots of people have said to me that the party is corrupt, and I say, well, possibly, but let's be more honest and more open about it, and let's offer people at least £5.
For their vote?
You're proposing
to buy people's votes?
Yeah, well...
For £5?
Well, it won't be as crude as that. We'll give them a vote voucher. So when they enter in their polling station and put a cross next to my name, hopefully, if it's in my Woodley constituency, not forgetting Tring, of course, I'll give them a £5 luncheon voucher to be spent at a local hostelry or a garage shop.
Don't you, in fact, own all of the public houses and shops in your constituency?
I do have links to them. My son, Titus, is actually the chief executive of the holding company, so there's no impropriety there.
No.
I'm also I also take policy advice from the from the local Reverend Reverend Chumley, who has advised me on many sexual matters, and I think that will help in the campaign because morality is a big issue we've forgotten here.
Right. Just actually on the question of morality, I'm rather glad that you've walked into that. I mean, raised that subject. You came out of the expenses scandal earlier this year quite badly, and you strongly resisted the call to resign.
Yes, well, yes.
Why did you do that, given that you had claimed on your parliamentary expenses that it was a reasonable use of public funds to paint your caravan in gold leaf, and I believe you employed a Filipino houseboy to iron your underpants? Do you really stand by your assertion that this is a reasonable use of public funding?
Well, if I can put it this way, people don't appreciate that the soft metal industry in the United Kingdom is in steep decline. So therefore, buying gold leaf, I thought, was a good way of trying to stimulate that microeconomy. And also, the caravan was looking a bit tired as well. And in terms of Joaquin, who I have actually given a Spanish name, although he is a Filipino, I just fancied a bit of young talent around the house. And there's nothing to smirk about, you know. There's a metrosexual world out here. I thought that he'd be quite good around, under, and over most of the house. But I really want to get back to the policy. You asked me about the policy in the first question.
Well, look, I must admit that me and probably everybody else listening, you know, all of our four other listeners, are not really convinced with anything that you've said so far. So perhaps looking at on a more local scale, how are things in your constituency after the major employer in your region shifted manufacturing to Taiwan and your local economy seems to be suffering somewhat severely?
Well, it's very difficult. It is very difficult for most of my staff, certainly matron and my driver, have taken a big hit recently. But as a party poised for government, we are going to we put together a package which will actually introduce £100 trillion. And a trillion is a term that we've invented because we can't print any more money any further.
So what is £1 trillion?
Well, it's very important that we clarify. A trillion is very simply, in layman's term, a million, trillion, billion, zillion, billion, million, ten.
So quite a lot, then.
It's a lot of noughts. That's why we've adopted the trillion, or the kr, as we say in the city, which is a CRL.
And what are you going to do with this new currency valuation?
Well, some of it we'll use on the buying votes that I mentioned.
Oh, yes, £5 a vote.
Some of it will be used to abolish the tampering tax, which the government have put into place, so that all unsanctioned fiddling will be tolerated and therefore untaxable.
And gold leaf for members of the government's caravans?
We're generally in favour of that. And we'd like to see more of it. I thought I set a very good example by using British gold and by also employing a Welshman to put the gold leaf on the caravan.
You can expect a challenge, I gather, from Esther Rampson or some similarly unemployed celebrity.
Yes, I believe Bernard Manning is going to come back from the dead.
Well, I think it stands an excellent chance in that case. How will you see off any of these unemployed celebrities you might stand against in your constituency?
Well, I think, you know, in the past, we've come up against this quite heavily. For example, we've had Hattie Jakes standing for Parliament, Bernard Breslau even had a go, I believe, and I think you'll remember Sid James was once Lord Chancellor of England.
No, Sid James actually was not a British citizen. He's ineligible to stand for Parliament.
Well, that's very curious. I saw him in the bar one night. Anyway, celebrity is a factor here, and you'll know me by now. I'm a very frank person, and I'll simply stand at the hustings and I'll say, "Look, what do you want? Someone you recognise or me?"
Well, I think that's a question which most voters will find very easy to answer.
Yes.
Jasper Minch, thank you very much for that interview. I'm afraid it won't go to air. We haven't been recording. Because you are patently a fucking idiot.
You fucker.
Piss off.
These are Real Plastic Buddha with a track called Forget Me Not.
Right now, Dave, since we last spoke, I mean, you know, in this forum, not since we last spoke, because that would be ridiculous, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Be about a couple of minutes ago.
Yes.
There's been very sad news in the pop world.
What's that?
That Michael Jackson, the king of pop, has sadly died.
He's been completely killed to death.
I believe he has. And the strange thing for me was that I was in California when it happened. But
were you on the end of a syringe?
I wasn't on the end. I was in San Francisco when it happened.
Okay.
And he died in LA, I think.
In a hospital or something?
Something like that. So it was very odd, and there was a strange kind of media blackout when it occurred, and all the radio stations went crazy. And
do you know, I remember exactly where I was and what I was doing when I heard the news.
Go on, what were you doing?
I was watching the news on television.
That is strange. It's funny, because I remember exactly where I was. I was listening to the radio.
Were you?
Yeah. What? In a car. I was driving a car.
Really?
Listening to the radio.
In America?
Somewhere.
So he was injected up with drugs and he died, basically. I mean,
apparently his doctor, who I can't remember the name of now, but it's alleged that he gave him too much Lemsip or something. Or
no, it was a mix of drugs that are powerful anaesthetics, I believe.
Really?
Yeah, and he mixed them up and, you know, with a little bit of lemon juice and some gin.
A little bit of paprika.
Some ice cubes and completely killed him to death.
It's very odd. And I've heard since that when they've done the autopsy on his body, which, to be honest, can't be a pleasant thing to have to do on anybody.
Not really on anyone.
No, I mean, what you get up to in your shed is, you know, your own business.
That's just amateur, though.
Yeah, okay. But I've heard that he had a completely healthy body, other than it being riddled with strange drugs. And he had some strange tattoos as well, I've learned, too.
What tattoos did he have?
Well, apparently he had a tattoo on his scalp, or his scalp even, if I say it properly.
Yeah.
To hide a bald patch.
He was bald at the front of his head, apparently. I don't know if that was a tattoo or he just wore a wig. Because his head got burned when he got set on fire during a Pepsi commercial filming.
With the devil?
No. Some light exploded or landed on his head or something and burnt him quite badly. Seriously, quite badly. And where his skin on his scalp scarred, the hair obviously wouldn't grow.
Maybe. Well, you could have a tattoo, perhaps.
Do you think?
Do you want me to do some curls with a biro?
On my head?
Yeah.
No, not really.
Okay. He also apparently had a tattoo around his lips to define his lip shape, which is a bit peculiar.
Oh.
And he also had his eyebrows tattooed, which is quite popular amongst sort of little old ladies, isn't it?
Yeah, who haven't got any hair on their eyebrows.
Yeah.
What was the story? Do you think he was completely nuts?
I think that there's strong evidence to suggest that he was a little bit mental.
Because look at the shape of his nose. I mean, it was getting weird.
Well, there were stories, weren't there, after he died that his nose fell off because it was made of plastic or something. That it kind of came off as a sort of novelty accessory.
Mm.
But whether that's true or not, who knows?
And did they use it to prop the coffin lid open?
Yeah, they used it as a kind of wine stopper, I think, for the party afterwards.
I did watch the memorial service.
Yes.
Did you watch it?
I saw some strange bits of it, and I thought it was very macabre.
I watched the first 2 hours of it, and then I gave up. I saw some people were quite good, actually. I saw Stevie Wonder. He was awful.
What was he? Was he singing? Or was
he sang, and he was completely out of tune, which as somebody as musically skilled as him, you've got to wonder what the hell he was playing at. He was awful. The worst performance I've ever seen of him.
I did see, I think it was...
I think what that means is that he hated Michael Jackson.
He probably did. What you mean, it was like a sort of anti-tribute?
Indeed, yeah.
Was that what you would call it, I suppose?
It was an insult.
It was an insult to him by singing badly.
And he finished off by defecating in the coffin.
Did he?
He said he thought it was the toilet.
That's not nice as well, because I know, I spoke to him earlier and he told me he's got a bit of a jippy tummy, so that's not particularly good. So what do you think the legacy of Michael Jackson will be? Obviously, there was all the nastiness around alleged kindergarten activities.
Mm.
But will he be known best for his music, do you think?
No, I don't think so. I think it'll be he'll always be a controversial figure. I think, obviously, his music is his main legacy, but also, you know, the implications of kiddie fiddling are going to be rife. Also, I imagine he's left about $100 million of debt, hasn't he?
He was quite bankrupt, wasn't he, when he died?
He was quite bankrupt. I think bankruptcy a definite state? You can't be...
that's true, yeah, that's true. He was financially wrecked, I think, maybe we could say that. But I know that he bought the Beatles' back catalogue or something.
Yeah,
is that right? He bought Apple Records.
He bought the music rights, didn't he, to the Beatles' catalogue.
Which, yeah. I suppose, is somewhere locked
$48 million or something.
Locked up in that trust.
I guess... No, he sold it on again, didn't he?
Did he
sell it on to Sony?
We took it in cash converters or something. Or
tune in next week when we'll have done some basic research.
Yeah, well, we could rudimentary. But I do know that there is a tour of this wonderful country by, I think, Tito Jackson, who is sort of doing his songs and his routines instead of him.
I bet that is going to be amazing.
Which, yeah, well, I imagine it would be.
I'm really hoping that that tour is going to come to the Plumstead Labour Club, and for £1.99 and chicken in a basket, you can see that.
I'd love to see it.
Yeah,
I think it'd be a good one to see.
Best view from anywhere in the first four rows. That'd be brilliant. I've actually written a poem about Michael Jackson. Would you like to hear it?
Have you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd absolutely love to hear it, because I was actually going to ask you something about poetry later, so you've preempted me.
Well, I'll give you this bit of art.
Well,
first.
I'm sitting comfortably now and I'm waiting for it.
And I'll give you. We'll go through the art first, then we can perhaps discuss and dissect it afterwards.
Well, of course.
A bit like, you know, we've done with Michael Jackson.
Yes.
Death Ode to Michael Jackson, deceased. Michael Jackson, you are dead, but we don't yet know why. Was it drugs or alcohol or too much Spanish fly? Your twisted face and changing race really puzzled all your fans. But what concerned us most of all was where you put your hands.
Right, so we're in deepest, darkest Dorset.
Deepest and darkest, indeed.
I'm here with a very old friend, Monsieur Pelé.
Ah, bonjour.
The world's best art teacher. And you've got a woodbine or something there.
Currently got a pipe on the go.
What's in that then? Gold blend. Nescafe, no doubt.
Dorset special.
Does the wife know about that?
It's just Golden Virginia.
Ah, just normal, some of the good stuff.
Normal bit of pipe tobacco.
It looks intriguing.
It's very intriguing.
Now, the general plan was for us to have a walk around your sheds.
That's right.
And you're quite fortunate, aren't you, that you've got three sheds?
Four.
Four? There's
four
a fourth
sheds.
One?
There's a fourth one at the back, which is the wife shed.
Oh, I see, yes.
Which will keep quiet.
Let's start with shed number one. Are they numbered? Or
shed number one will be Mini Palais shed.
Let's have a look. Can we have a look in that?
We can have a look.
I'm quite excited about that. Just to describe that, it's a kind of half building. An outbuilding with a blue door and a butterfly above it, and a very nice gold doorknob there, and perhaps brass.
We call it Halfling Lodge.
Halfling Lodge. It's got it's got lots of things in there. There's a little kitchen at the back and a little table with what I hope are plastic burgers.
They are plastic burgers.
But they do look a bit dubious.
They look a little bit like sweetmeats.
They do look a little bit like
sweetmeats. Dorset delicacy.
And there's a beautifully crafted porthole as well. There's a
there
kind
is.
Of window. In fact, there's two I can see from here.
They are, and they are made from the finest perspex.
So this is where Freya, your daughter, hides, presumably. Or do you put her out here when she's been naughty?
She will eventually next year be living out here.
Oh, really?
So that we can rent out her room to 55 Albanian refugees.
Excellent, excellent.
Who are currently in the attic, but it's leaking.
Yeah, brilliant. Okay, so that's shed number one, which is very exciting. What's in shed number two?
Shed number two is full of
Secrets
and human detritus.
Wow.
And this is just full of absolute...
Well, if I just describe this, it's basically a small room made of breeze blocks full of absolute crap by the looks of it.
Absolute crap.
But there's a CD in here, which I've already spotted, because, as you know, I'm a bit of a fan. Paul Weller's Greatest Hits, that looks like it's been in the rain somewhat.
It has been desecrated.
But I think that probably says a lot.
This shed was all about originally like an art installation of bringing the outside in.
Okay.
So we decided to invite in the rain for about 3 years solid. And all of the objects on that back shelf unit there got very, very wet for about 3 years.
Now, there's some of your art over there, which I can see on the shelf. Is that one of your...
It's one of my finest ceramic sculptures.
Your ceramic piece. Tell me about that. What's the inspiration behind that?
Those were from my long hair days.
You've still got long hair now, though.
I've still got long hair. I've gone back retro. And
You've got that hairy biker image now.
With a big gay moustache.
Yeah.
But that was from my my days of sea life ceramics, my architectural features.
Is it a mollusk?
It is a mollusk.
Oh.
I have a variety of other ones that are in various states of disrepair around the garden.
There's various saws and other dangerous bits of equipment in here. I went to see Richard Hawley in concert recently, and they had someone playing a saw. Have you ever had a try on that?
I haven't, but I don't have a bow here to strum it with, unfortunately.
But I think they use actual kind of proper musical saws rather than ones with teeth.
I don't think you get much of a tone out of that, as it won't even go through a piece of bloody wood.
Okay.
You get much of a note out of it.
So it's not much good. Okay, so that's shed number two. That's quite exciting. So, but I believe shed number three is your pièce de la résistance.
Oh la la. Shed number three.
Let's have a look at that. This fit all exciting.
Has been dubbed locally the Potter's Arms.
The Potter's Arms.
Yeah, and it's a subterranean shed, which for many years has been used as a pool because it filled up with water.
So what does that, what does subterranean mean in your mind?
It's about 2 foot underground.
Right.
So the actual foundation of this is actually beneath a normal walking level of the garden.
There is already, since we've come in, there's already a different kind of ambience, a different tone.
There is.
It's a feeling.
It's a feeling of homely, warmly manness, featuring dartboards, a variety of beer tags and badges, still some power equipment, so there's still some saws here, you know, got a nice big jigsaw, speckled hen.
Ah, yes.
A very nice speckled
and
hen badge.
This is about you having some kind of bar built in here.
A bar.
So basically you're building your own little house in the garden.
Yeah, because we live in the middle of bloody nowhere, and there's nothing nowhere near, we're having a kind of garden shed pub.
Excellent. So are you going to plan to get a licence in time?
I see myself more as a licensed maverick, you see. So I prefer to just, you know, a little bit of homebrew and a little bit of... you know, slow gin on the go, perhaps a few barrels of
just
moonshine on the go.
While away the hours drinking,
while away the hours drinking
illicitly
and playing darts.
Brewed booze.
Absolutely.
And so these badges, I don't. There is a name for these, but I can't remember what they are. These kind of, like, they look like what Shire horses used to wear,
yeah.
Or the kind of dray horses.
I call them Mamooze badges.
Mamooze?
Booze.
Oh, booze.
Because that's a pop group.
Yeah.
No, these
or
are
we can
beer,
talk about that later.
Beer badges. And
yeah,
they're badges from beer. And I purveyed them off a chap of eBay who had collected them and spent a vast amount of money collecting each one for about a fiver. And I brought about 11 for £2, which is...
Do you think they're quite new? Because they've got in quite good nick.
I don't think they've ever seen the light of a pub in their life,
yeah.
Unfortunately. But we also have here next to the potter's wheel, which has just been freshly painted up.
Which is an impressive bit of kit.
It is.
Just to describe it, it looks like a galvanised bath chair.
It is.
But it obviously does more than that.
It's like a disabled Dalek in half, really.
Yes.
And I've got myself some nice little...
the Guinness beer towel.
Guinness beer towels, which are quite handy for putting over your knees whilst you're throwing pottery.
Yes, or wiping your face,
your face.
After you've vomited in the cabbage patch, I thought.
That's right, yes.
Yeah. Yeah,
might as well.
Dual purpose.
And we've got various bits of ceramic equipment in disrepair and renovation, like a big mangle.
So this is your passion, isn't it? This is what you are by trade, really,
this
a ceramicist.
My trade is ceramics and pottery of all varieties. So
is there anything you've potted recently, or... is that the right term?
Not here.
Pottered.
No, I haven't potted anything here recently because I, obviously working in the school, I get to potter a little bit about there and that kind of stays there, unfortunately. But this is the escape plan, is to make stuff here and kind of ship it out to China and sell it cheap just to piss them off a bit.
So when you crank this thing up, this wheel, does it make much noise?
It sounds not dissimilar from standing in the middle of an Anne Summers party.
Excellent.
To be absolutely fair.
Lots of whirring.
It also gives you a similar bone-retching kind of vibration between the legs as one such party that I chanced upon.
So it really is a kind of pleasure piece.
It is.
In so many ways.
A pleasure piece. You know, it's long gone from the days of Patrick Swayze, bless his soul, and Demi Moore and Ghost. It's not quite so romantic as that, but... would probably do as good a job, I would.
Although, I believe you have refilmed that sequence with a local Morris dancing troupe. But we probably should go into that.
No, we won't go there.
So tell me, over here, I'm struck by this mangle that you told me you're renovating a mangle.
I am. This is a...
Which sounds like something that you would be doing.
It is. It's a 1910 mangle,
yes.
Which I chanced across at a boot fair, which, for me, mm-hmm. Is quite ideal for rolling out clay slabs.
I see. So, I mean... What is it made of? Is it kind of wrought iron or something?
It's cast iron.
Right.
So it's very old and rusty at the moment, but it's having a lick of some rather fantastic Eastern European hammerite.
Right.
I chanced across at the Great Dorset Steam Fair. This
so stuff, is that, where's it from? It is actually Eastern European.
It is. It's fantastic.
It looks like it's, is it Polish or Hungarian or something?
Polish or Hungarian. It's got the kind of head whiz of any very strong narcotic drug.
Right.
If you use it in an enclosed space.
Probably best not to then.
Best not to, you know. I've not even considered sparking up a pipe anywhere near this stuff because it's particularly good.
So what are you going to do when you run out of that?
I'm going to have to change to green, I think.
Right, okay.
As green is the only colour that Focus seem to sell with English instructions on it.
So this would have been used as a kind of, like, a washing kind
this
of
is your,
mangle.
Your clothes
is that the idea?
Drying and kind of folding mangle that you would pass clothes through. And this big wooden box here contains, well, literally the sheets fold into that as you pass them through.
So it's nearly 100 years old?
At least.
And if you don't mind me asking, was it expensive to buy?
Well, the chap who I brought it from told me who he was a very dodgy-looking fellow, looked a bit like a pirate. He assured me that the person he'd brought it off had paid 70 quid for it.
Wow.
And I said that I would be doing no such thing. And so I chanced it from him for 20 good English pounds.
That's not a bad
which
price.
Bad
not
price.
A bad price.
For something older than you, Dan, it's not bad, I thought.
Is there a big following for mangles on the internet, do you think?
Well, I think there's a reasonable, you know, special genre for all things mangle.
Mangles.com.
That's right, absolutely.
So take me over to the far corner of shed number three. I've noticed instantly, earlier, that there's a science fiction corner.
There is a science fiction genre corner.
Perhaps you could describe that for me.
Well, it contains a fantastic photograph of a photoshopped rendition of about 67 stormtroopers from Star Wars. And adorning the top is a set of six Doctor Who caricatures featuring such delights as David Tennant in a cartoonish, impish fashion. Bizarrely, his legs are in a particularly strange position, but never mind.
He is kind of crouching.
He is definitely
strange way.
Squatting, yeah. I'm not sure what he's holding in his hand, but I'm assured it's a sonic screwdriver.
Right.
Again, we're reverting back to the Anne Summers kind of guttural thing there.
Yes.
There's two squat-looking Daleks, which are quite fun. A Cyberman, a Clockwork Robot, and a Sontara, and all in a very similar kind of comic-y stance.
I have to say, they are very nice trinkets.
Well, absolutely, I love a bit of trinketry.
And also very you, because, I mean, as I've known you since I was about six.
At least. Yeah.
I've known that you're a Hooverian, I think. Is that the right word?
A bit of a Hoovanian.
A Hoovanian?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a new one.
Yeah.
So, that's nice. That's a bit of character.
Oh, I love
a bit of personalisation.
Absolutely.
So, eventually, when you have your moonshine evenings, will you be showing films or
I will be,
episodes in here?
Projecting episodes across the back wall.
Excellent, yeah. Excellent. Now, if we look at the back wall, just coming to the final wall of shed number three... you've got a dartboard.
I have a dartboard.
Is that a traditional...
This is continuing the 18th century potters always had dartboards in their pottery studios. No one's quite sure. They had other things, but my wife won't allow me to put those in.
Well, quite right.
I promised her. And beneath the dartboard is another throwback to the old potters, which is a kind of baby purple folding down bar. Above which the optics are going to be sitting.
I've noticed that. It's a kind of dark lilac colour, isn't it? Which
it is.
Well, I suppose you get away with that.
It's very fine.
So how's that going to work? Because at the moment that looks like a very camp shelf.
It is. It looks like a very camp shelf. But if we took all the stuff off it and pulled it towards us, it would then drop down.
I see.
And fold in flat against the wall.
So that's where the illicit booze will be served from.
That's where illicit booze. And underneath there's an illicit shelf where lots of little demijohns might start appearing with home brew.
I'm really quite impressed because you've got some quite big plans.
Oh, absolutely.
For your shed so far, but you've achieved quite a lot. Because I can remember coming here a couple of years ago, and there was literally just a kind of
hole in the ground.
Hole in the ground. Yeah,
yeah,
so
that's right.
So yeah, so I'm quite impressed. So I'll give it sort of. I think I'll maybe give it 8 out of 10 so far.
Oh, I'm very pleased with that.
Have you got plans for colouring the walls at all, or are they going to stay in beautiful white?
Well, I think beautiful white is going to have to be the order today because there's a new solid roof going on.
Right.
Which is going to obviously zap the light out like a plenty. So I think as much white to bounce light around in this studio as possible already.
At the moment, we've got slightly kind of moss-laden plastic corrugated sheeting.
Yeah.
Which I guess lets the water in a bit, does it?
No, it's all right so far, but it just looks shit.
Right, okay. However, it's a stylistic change.
It is stylistic change. Most of it, fortunately, was recycled from Focus because they thought it was the expensive stuff. And it wasn't. I might have brought one expensive one and put all the other ones underneath it, claiming it was a cheaper than cheerful.
I think that might be slightly dishonest. So
it might be verging on dishonesty.
We'll pass over that. Absolutely. So, show me shed number four, which is at the end of your lovely garden.
There's a key
involved for this one.
There is.
I knew it would get slightly involved. Well, there it is.
For many fair, beautiful years around deepest, darkest Dorset, we have been invaded by the Dorset pikey.
Is that right?
Which is a...
Is that the lesser or the larger?
It's the larger.
Right.
They inhabited the very large zebra-striped bus up the road.
Right, okay.
And I'm sure that they're lovely people, and I have absolutely no problems with the travelling fraternities. I didn't really want them... taken anything from my shed. So
now shed number four is a more traditional looking shed in the sense that it's a standalone wood structure.
Now this was our free gift with the house.
But it's beautiful. Indeed. And it's it's what I would expect to see in a shed, so in some ways it's kind of disappointing in comparison to the last one, but it's more traditional. It's just, I suppose, basically somewhere to throw your, as you have done,
lawnmower
and your bikes.
Bicycles. And also Freya's bicycle.
A little chariot.
Chariot, yes, which is quite fun.
That's excellent. And you've also got, is it a bird box or a bee box or something on the outside? Bee box, which is...
These are ladybirds, but they don't seem to like it very much.
What? How does it work?
Well, the idea is that all the little bamboo bits encourage them to come in, because I'm all for saving the bee.
Yes. There's a big campaign around that at the moment, isn't there?
Yeah. Big campaign, but unfortunately they don't really seem to have taken to it.
Oh.
I was expecting honey to be dribbling out the bottom of the box, but
right,
no such thing.
So it's basically like a bird box, but with like canes
That's
stuck
right.
into it.
Lots of canes.
Right.
Something's been in it, because something has put all these little bits of mud, so there must have been like a masonry beer, some variety in there at some stage. So I feel slightly smug that I've saved something.
Excellent. Well, there you go. That's a tour of the four sheds of Monsieur Palais.
Now, a fifth area of escapism from the lady indoors is also the greenhouse, which, although not strictly speaking a shed...
It's a kind of transparent shed, isn't it?
It is. It's kind of a place where you can hide but still be seen, so it doesn't really count as a man's shed, to be fair.
Maybe we could call it the crystal shed.
The crystal shed, oh, yeah. I'm sure someone's done something like that before, a big shed in the middle of London that they called Crystal something.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
So is it? It could be an art installation as well.
It could well be.
And you've got some chilies and things growing in there, which look particularly red.
And I've got a whole variety of other things that were growing but have since passed, but haven't moved. They're just kind of, you know, in stasis.
And in front of that, and between Gloria's shed number four, you've got a kind of vegetable patch which looks quite kind of... I suppose fertile is probably the right word to use.
It is
fertile. You've got some rhubarb and some... Is that beetroot and stuff down there?
Beetroots have done their day.
Right.
Red cabbage we've got, and we've got some lovely chard, which is similar to rhubarb.
And a bit of Mary Jane Wana over there, but we won't talk about that.
That's courgette.
Oh, is it? Oh, I always get those two confused.
And a whole variety of artichokes in the middle there, and the remnants of our beans. So yes, it's not the good life quite yet. I don't see myself running off with Richard Briers, but we're certainly, you know...
We're getting there,
a little bit more self-sufficient, thank goodness.
So you're quite a country man now, aren't you? Because you and I grew up in the same town.
Yes.
Albeit by the sea.
That's right.
And not particularly sort of urban or kind of rural.
Not
just
at all.
Just a small town, really.
You kind of get into it in this area, and many a Saturday morning where I adorn my hunting greens and go out chav shooting across the glen, which is particularly good. You know, it keeps them on the run.
You did do some beating, didn't you?
I did
for a time.
I did a day's beating,
which is scaring birds.
And it nearly killed me.
Not physical abuse.
You're essentially it's nothing like that. I'm sure that you could probably do that whilst out.
Yeah, you probably could.
But no, the idea is essentially that you startle a bird, so it flies up into the awaiting shooting range of a bunch of toffs.
So they can have it for their dinner.
Have it for their dinner. They spend about £300 a shoot. And bag about two birds, so that's not too bad.
And how did you get into that? Were you just approached as a potential beater?
I was coerced. A friend heard about my beating skills,
right?
But got the wrong end of the stick, I think. If you pardon the expression.
Yes. Well, that's excellent. And before we go, we must because you and I are from sunny Tynmouth in
Absolutely.
Devon, we must talk about the big event that happened there recently, which was the band Muse. Who you and I have some experience of, because
we have a lot of experience of Muse.
Whilst Absolutely. We were in the sixth form, they were in the lower sixth, weren't they?
They were.
They were called something like the
Rocket Baby Dolls.
That was it. Yep.
And in fact, the drummer Dom was also in our house, Hawkins.
Yes.
And so when we were playing as a special delivery, as we were in that house music band, he was also in the other house music band, and. Grumbled at me because I was a right-handed drummer and he's left-handed, and I refused to change the kit over for someone who was left-handed.
Which is outrageous, isn't it?
It is outrageous. It's,
but look where they are now, and look where we are.
That's right.
And rambling in a vegetable patch.
But I feel that I made my point.
Well, I think that's at the end of the day, I think that's the most important thing,
that's
isn't
right.
it?
I mean, you could have millions of pounds and Japanese girls throwing themselves at you. However, I think I've got the moral line here. So
yeah, well, I'm exactly. Happy. You stand your ground. So
I do.
The backstory of this is that Muse, a phenomenally successful band now from Tynmouth, recently did a homecoming gig on the Den, which is a kind of to describe it, I suppose it's like a little kind of patch of grass, isn't
it? Like a dodgy football pitch.
Yeah, it's like a dodgy football pitch.
People vomit on and...
Yeah, and sort of roll about when they've had a few too many.
That's right.
Near the promenade on the fabulous seafront area.
Near Tulip Gate.
And I believe that they sold something like 10,000 tickets. 20,000 tickets? But they actually had a kind of 30,000 capacity for the event.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Which, to be fair to them, you know, whether you like them or not, and I think you and I maybe differ on this.
I quite like them, yeah. I'm quite a bit of a fan.
I'm not hugely taken with them, but, you know, we can talk about that. But there was about 30,000 capacity, I think, on each day, and they did three days, is that right? So it did a lot of good for the town, I suppose,
Absolutely.
In terms of its economy.
Although an insider has said that it has absolutely wrecked the grass, but never mind, they're reseeding.
Is that right?
Yeah, apparently so. It's done more damage, says my insider, than the fair used to in a whole 2 weeks of the various rides, like the Dodgems being on there. So
that's outrageous.
Yeah.
Good for grass. There were two kind of local stories I heard about it, which I particularly like. One was and which I saw on the telly, it's quite strange when you come from a place like that, which isn't particularly famous or well known. Strange seeing it on TV.
It's very bizarre.
From a film helicopter.
Yeah, that's which, right.
But good all the less. And one thing I heard was that the bowling green, which used to be frequented by gentle old pensioners.
Yes.
Was actually kind of boarded over and set up the beer tent, which is where they had all the alcohol, which I like the idea of.
That's where Mr. Chris Moores has been frequenting a stage nearby that, actually, on the TV. I definitely scoped him.
Sighted.
Definitely there.
And the other thing that I really liked that I heard a story about was a guy who owns a restaurant in the old cinema, in the Riviera Cinema, threw out all his bookings for those three evenings that he'd had months in advance and said, sorry, you know, we're cancelling your table, whatever, and promptly sold those spaces for a lot more money.
Yeah.
Which is quite entrepreneurial, but also a little bit cheeky.
A little bit cheeky. 85 quid was the amount that I heard.
That's quite
and
cheeky.
And there was also a place right above the Den toilets. I'm not really selling this, actually, as a tourist hotspot.
No.
But right above the old bandstand where I used to skate as a child, there is this other cafe, which might be something to do with looking for stuff on a beach. And they also apparently were selling tickets for about 85 quid, which, you know, if you can do it, why not? I'm sure it helps some people out. I hope they gave some of it to charity, but that's the kind of person I am.
I think the thing is, for the town, it was a golden opportunity.
Absolutely.
And probably, in some ways, a once-in-a-lifetime deal.
too
in,
right.
But I have seen in local press there, because the parents have sent on stuff to me, that they're now trying to sell Tynmouth as a kind of global gig venue, which is very amusing. But you know, who you never know, it might happen. You might get U2 or the Foo Fighters or REM even may play.
My particular favourite store that I saw was Councillor Fusco, bless him.
Oh, yes.
I seem to remember a few years ago when Muse were reported as saying on TV, MTV, that their town was a bit of a toilet, and all they wanted to do was escape or take drugs. Or
yes.
Like. But Councillor Fusco was seen in the local press putting their album into the bin. Whereas now, obviously, he's kind of welcomed them with open arms. They brought like £1 million into the community in a couple of days. So.
Well, I think
an interesting turnaround.
I think they've kind of kissed and made up, haven't they?
I think they have, yeah. So. Which is a good thing.
Yeah, it's good for them.
Glorious.
So there we are. So anyway, that concludes, I suppose, our tour around your beautiful garden.
Absolutely.
And thank you very much for showing me the four sheds. And I'll put pictures of those up on the fabulous website.
Oh, absolutely.
And, for the moment, thanks very much, and good luck with those beetroot.
Yeah, well, yeah.
So and,
I think they've had their day, to be honest.
I think I might tuck into a bit of rhubarb later on.
Excellent. Goodbye.
James, have you heard about this thing called Cringe London?
No, but I can imagine there are lots of things in London that would make me cringe.
Indeed, you being one of them.
We are quite at night, certainly.
Cringe London is it's a performance art method adopted by a visiting American entertaining lady.
I'm not surprised that you know about it, given your dalliance into performance art.
I believe her name is Sarah Brown, because I've just read that.
Right, okay. And, not the Prime Minister's wife?
No, I don't think so.
Right.
That would be a coincidence, wouldn't it?
It would.
No, it's about embarrassing teenage diaries.
Right.
And what this girl does is that she found her own diaries, which were pretty embarrassing.
Okay.
And she sort of started incorporating them into her entertainment performance artwork.
Peace.
Yes.
Yes.
And she decided to sort of open up the mic and invite people to come up and read out extracts or supply extracts to her of their own diaries. And did you ever keep a diary as a teenager?
Do you know, I was just thinking, I don't think I ever did. I think I internalised it all.
Did you?
Yeah. All the hatred.
Yeah, just push it down into a bitter little ball.
Yes.
What I didn't really keep a diary. I did used to record things like sports scores that I was interested in. And like teams that I'd played on, I'd record sports scores for things like that, particularly if we'd won. Not so much if
when
we lost.
When you say record them, what do you mean? Read them out?
No, write them down.
Oh, write them down.
In a diary, yeah. In like an, I had an exercise book.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I used to...
Was it a red one?
I can't remember. I think it was purple. You know, teenager.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
And, I don't think I did much proper diary work. I remember I used to go to the Laser Zone a lot when I was a kid. When I was like about 14. And I used to record my Laser Zone scores in the diary.
And were you progressively better or progressively worse?
I don't know if I'd find it and do a statistical
analysis.
I'd
be interested in some forecasting.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, there's not much Laser Zoning going on these days. It'd have to be all retrospective, I'm afraid.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm happy with that.
Probably do some trend analysis.
Yeah. Anyway, back to your cringing.
Econometrics. I thought I'd just share with you some of the sample... embarrassing teen diary excerpts that were supplied, because some of them are fantastic. There's some poetry, which is pretty terrible.
Well, we do love a bit of that.
There's a girl called Liz Banks who, when she was 15, wrote, "I've just decided, well, not decided, found out, I'm nihilistic. Dad's just come in and told me to tidy my room. It is bloody tidy. He must have had a bad day at work. Wanker."
I like the addition of the slightly fruity word at the end there.
No, it says wanker.
I know, but it must have been taking a lot of bravery to write that in a book.
Do you think?
When you're a kid.
Naughty word
like that, it's quite, you know.
Here is Why Am I Unhappy by a girl called Jo when she was 15.
Right.
Because Mum and Dad row, because I have schoolwork to do, because Rob Andrew and Graham Hick are married.
Right.
Because they're sports people.
Oh, right, okay, thanks.
That. Because I have GCSEs next year, because I am ugly, because Adrian didn't fancy me, because I've done no art, because I have no friends I like, because my room's a mess, because there's a Conservative government.
I think it's quite sort of, you know, it covers all the kind of bases, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And it's quite succinct. It's quite, you know, it gets a lot of bullet points. Mm. On the subject of people called Adrian, I don't know if you know anyone called Adrian.
Yeah, one or two.
But I don't know any Adrians at the moment. But I remember at school there was a big fat lad called Adrian, and he was huge. He was literally, you know, like Augustus Gloop in Willy Wonka.
Yeah,
who liked it up the chocolate chute. Is that what he's famous for?
He was just a big fat pig, wasn't he?
Was he? Oh, I'm getting confused. Maybe that was another version.
I think that's some other film you've seen.
Oh, sorry. Anyway, this guy Adrian was huge. He's probably like a rake now. And all I can remember him doing, literally, all I can remember him doing at school was eating cream cakes or eclairs. He's literally like an eclair mountain.
Maybe he's become a cream cake eating professional.
It could have been. But he was one of those kind of like very whingy kids, you know, like really kind of, you know, worse than me.
What you mean when he wasn't putting cakes in his mouth?
Yeah, exactly. He would always moan. And although he was probably, I don't know, let's just say he was probably 10, 12 or something, he behaved like a 3-year-old, you know, so he'd be like kind of stopping around and, you know, smashing the place up and asking for a cream cake and stuff. I just reminisced there.
That's it's almost like your own teen diary.
It is.
Only not amusing. On with the drama. Here's an excerpt from Stuart, who is a sixth former. I must tell you about. It's titled "My Bedroom, Dear Somebody." Surely it's to yourself.
To whom it may concern.
Indeed. In fact, sorry, it's not by Stuart somebody, it's by Antonia somebody. This is by a girl.
Oh.
Assuming Antonia's a girl. She might not be now.
Could be Anthony now.
It was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Literally.
And that sort of thing's allowed.
It was a 16-year-old Antonia. My bedroom, dear somebody, I must tell you about last night. See, I'll just break away from the diary for a minute. She already knows what happened last night because she was there.
Yeah.
So who? She's writing.
But she's writing in the kind of third person? Second person?
No, she's writing in the first person, but to a third person.
Okay.
But she's not really writing to any third person. It's her
That's
own
quite
diary.
Theatrical, isn't it? Mm. I think that kind of thing.
Surely she
kind of Beckett or someone.
For it to be grammatically correct, surely she should have written, "Dear me."
Dear me, here's what I did last night.
Yes, I know you already know because you are me, and I know. Full stop. The end.
This is why you never kept a diary.
No,
isn't it?
I'm too logical to write diaries. Yeah. Anyway, bedroom, dear somebody. I must tell you about last night. We went to two awful pubs in Richmond. Andrew is sort of into astrology. He sat up the night before last and did his and my solar charts.
Ooh.
All the character descriptions on mine are 100% accurate, and he and I have a lot in common. For example, we both fear rejection and isolation, are looking for a long-lasting relationship, and lots of other things I can't remember.
I love. I really like that. And what I really like about that is the way it sets the scene by two awful pubs in Richmond. You know,
it does sound like a dreamy night.
It does.
It?
Do you think it means Richmond, London, or Richmond, Virginia, or Richmond Yorkshire?
I would guess Richmond, being southern-centric, but I've no idea.
Oh, okay.
Who knows?
So you haven't got nuggets of your own. Memoir.
No, but this one does chime with me. This is by Joe, aged 15. I hate Mum. She said I can't have a coat as I still fit in my old one.
We've all been there.
That immediately does chime with me, doesn't
it? Yeah. You'll grow into it.
Yeah, just, you know, so a coat for me was either one that I'd had for like 5 years, so the sleeves came barely down to that little bump just at the top of your wrist.
Yes.
Or it'd be one from my brother where the sleeve would come 4 inches over the end of the hand.
Yes, I had similar things because I've got two older brothers. I'd usually get like shirts or ties that they'd had.
That had gone yellow with age.
So they looked like, you know, like a tramp had slept in them or died in them or something. And then the tie itself would be absolutely threadbare. And you know how that fine polyester vinyl whatever it is
quality
they're made
material.
Out goes slightly soft and limp. They're all like that.
It looked permanently creased.
Yeah. And certainly jackets, I can remember being, as you described, very sort of Alexis Sale, skimpy, or just huge, you know, and you could tie the arms up.
I'd love to see you in an Alexis Sale silver suit.
There's probably a picture somewhere, yeah.
That would be smart. Well, on with the diary. I hate Mum. She said I can't have a coat as I still fit my old one. I'm going to feel a prick if I wear a coat everyone was wearing last year. She's such a bitch. It doesn't cost that much, and I need a coat. She's such a slapper. She's only doing it because I get most things I want, so she says no, so I'm not spoiled. She's a bitch. And I've lost my keys, and she'll have an epi if she finds out. Oh, I hate her, and I hate myself for losing them. God, I'm pissed off. I know it's only keys, but if I've lost them, I'll go mad. I hate losing things, but I do a lot. Ooh, I'm so mad.
there's a lot of very nice detail in that, isn't there?
I know, and I did read that out brilliantly.
Yeah, you did very. I've got BBC Radio 4 on the line for
really
you. Archers they're talking about.
Tell them to piss off. I really like the teen angst drama interwoven into those childish words. I think there's some real soul bearing emotion there.
I guess what it touches on is the kind of peer pressure, which I think we all go through as kids. I think it's probably got worse recently because there are more, there's more and more things that kids have to have and have to do and all those kind of things.
Yeah, well, she should have had my dad, who would have said something like, "Nothing wrong with that bloody coat. It's not even worn through on the elbows."
My parents would have been, the same kind of. They would have taken the same take on it, and they would have said, "Look, just because those trousers are a little bit prompt, doesn't make them unwearable."
There's nothing wrong with having trousers that are 4 inches above your ankle.
Exactly. One of the battles I always had with my parents, my mum in particular, was about shoes, because I've got quite big feet.
You wanted shoes, and she said, "I'm not. You can have carry your bags taped up on your feet or nothing."
She said, "Look, son, we can't afford them. Barely eat." But anyway,
she made you wear hers.
I used to have some of the worst shoes available. I can remember having a very cheap grey pair that were kind of like, sort of like, like Airfix paint grey.
Light grey?
Yeah, like really light grey. And they had like a kind of wicker pattern over the top.
I know the
like
shoe.
The kind of,
I know the shoe.
And like a heel as well. Like a lady's heel at the back slightly. But the worst thing was, at the time I probably had size like 7 feet.
14.
Yeah, 40. No, size 7 or something. But whenever we bought shoes, they were always like, "They've only got a 6 left."
Yeah, or a 9.
So I used to basically put these shoes on and like, "Oh, Mum, I'm not really sure about this. I think the circulation might be cut off." Like, no, they're fine. They'll give a little. And we used to buy these ridiculous sprays that you can get and spray in them, so the leather gives.
Soften.
Not really that it would have made a difference on, PVC. And so the consequence of that was I used to come home with like blooded stumps and the nice light grey shoe had gone sort of black at the back where like the sort of the gashes had kind
dried
of
dried blood.
Yeah, yeah. And then they'd always be replaced by another equally awful pair of shoes, including, I'll finish on these, including a lovely pair of grey patent leather shoes, which is that kind of shiny gloss that they give. They look very nice with a pair of black school trousers, I have to say.
That does sound classy.
And also, those kind of gifts, because they are gifts, particularly to people who want to bully you or mark you out
or hate you.
Yeah. So it, to be honest, I'm thinking about it now, and I'm kind of putting it down to a lot of kind of the psychological problems that I've developed over
and
the years.
All their murders you've done.
You were, yeah.
I was at school with a couple of guys, a couple of brothers, Paul and Martin, and Paul was a big practical joker, and he used to constantly play tricks on Martin. And I'll tell you two of the things that he did that I remember, which are very amusing. One was that he put liners in Martin's shoes without telling him, and so his shoes were too small.
And, that's a bit harsh.
Yeah, that was pretty nasty. And the other thing he did was that one day we had very cold weather back in those days, in the 19th century.
Yeah,
when I was at school.
Spitfires in the sky.
If it was an icy, slippery day, Paul would, before Martin got up, he would get the pledge out and he would polish the bottom of Martin's shoes, either with pledge or, you used to be able to get in those days a lavender, like a wax polish
that
you would put on like on cupboard doors and things like that. He used to put lavender wax polish on the bottom of his own brother's shoes.
Did he ever really hurt himself?
Loads of times. Really? He was always going A over T down sets of really steep stairs and things
like that. Is he an only child now?
Yeah. He's nice. He broke his back on a particularly steep flight
of
stairs.
I am laughing.
Going
that,
down to the
that is terrible
going down to the sports hall one day.
It also reminds me.
But we all laughed.
On the subject of appalling clothing, you'll know that I used to work in a bank, a wonderful financial institution, and I had to wear what has always been described as the corporate car seat cover, which was a suit really kind of cut out of the car seat material, which was horrible, basically horrible, and it had an appalling thick blue pinstripe. And it would be wrong of me to mention that it was the Royal Bank of Scotland that I worked for.
I don't think you should mention that.
So I won't. But I always remember that one day we had this new lad start, and he was a tiny little fella. He was like, you know, sort of Ronnie Corbett size.
Mm. Did he have a full-length portrait picture as his passport photo?
I think he did. Anyway, he started, and like the week after, his uniform came. The guy that was the business manager in the branch thought it'd be a bit of a jape to have, you know, play a bit of a trick on him. So he went out the back and he found this jacket from a previous employee, which is actually like a size 56 chest.
Which, for a guy who'd been like 30 yeah, stone.
For a guy that probably had, to be honest, he probably had like a sort of 30 inch chest or something, you know, like, you know, yeah, a lot smaller. So he swapped it.
What, 26 inches?
Yeah, yeah. He swapped it in the box. Right? So this lad put the trousers. He put the trousers on. He thought, "Oh, these are all right. They fit quite nicely. You know, look quite smart. But you know, yep, apart from the big thick blue stripe." Then he put the jacket on, and literally, he nearly fell over, given the size of it. And he was—you could see that he was mildly embarrassed. He was like, "Oh God, you know, is this the jacket I've got to wear?
It's a little bit roomy."
And anyway, he came out into the sort of in the main banking hall. And was treated to, you know, complete disarray and of laughter. And then after about 5-10 minutes, you know, when he was actually crying, you know, he'd been broken by it. This guy came over and actually told him and gave him the jacket. And it was hilarious.
Anybody pulls a trick like that, that is absolutely despicable. I think that's appalling.
I agree. But the best thing was that this was all a brilliant distraction to me having loads of money out of the safe.
Oh, that was nice.
Yeah, it was good.
Well, no, the reason I mentioned that was that I myself participated in something of a similar jape with some friends of mine. It was a friend of mine was getting married, and there were a number of us as joint best men.
Joint.
And we ordered, you know, the full hired wedding outfit, kit, yes, and everything.
Smart howdy-do's and a tip-top hat.
Indeed. No top hat, that would be nubbish. But we decided, I decided it'd be quite amusing to switch the trousers for one of my friend with another friend. My friend Russ, you know, there is a certain distance around the waist.
Yeah, there is.
You know, it probably is in the region of about, at that time, 44 inches, I would think.
There is a certain distance around Saturn.
Indeed, yeah. Yeah, bear that in mind when you're casting a mental image. We borrowed Russ's trousers with his permission. He was very giving, which were a 44-inch waist, and switched them for my mate Fielder's trousers, he being about a 33-inch waist.
Right.
So we put Fielder's trousers in the other room, then put Russ's trousers on the hanger inside his suit bag, and me and my mate Rich, who's getting married, we left Fielder to try his stuff on when he came round to pick it up, and went out into the garden and just had silent hysterics. And after about 15, you know how long it takes to try a suit on, like, yeah, you know, 5 minutes. After 15 minutes, no sign of him at all. And I said to Rich, "You're going to have to go up and see what he's doing." And he went up there, and he was sweating. Because this was the It was the day before the wedding, this was, and there was no opportunity to go and
this get was the last deal.
Yeah, this was the last chance saloon. And he was standing there with no shirt on, no socks on, with these trousers on, which were, you know, a foot too big. You could have got a football in the crotch with him, should he have wanted to.
He probably did.
In a stressful way, trying to adjust the buttons, which give about, you know, half an inch of play on either side, in order to reduce, you know, 16 inches off the waist or something. Anyway, so we left him like that for about another half an hour and repeatedly told him that he couldn't go back to the shop and there wasn't time, and we thought it shut in half an hour and things like that. And then finally, Rich did relent and say, "Well, you could always try on your own trousers instead of Russell's, and I've got yours here." And then there was a big long stream of flowery language.
Flowery language.
Very flowery indeed.
I've met him, and I imagine he could get very, very extremely flowery.
It was flowery. Do you want to go back to one more diary excerpt?
Yeah, go on. Before we wind go on, and why not?
Well, this is a bit of Stuart's diary from back in the 90s when he was in the sixth form, I believe. And this is what he wrote. "Okay, the evening started well. I had too much to drink. Dave asked me this question. Who do you fancy? I said, well, up to 2 or 3 weeks ago, I fancied Juliet Sharp like crazy, brackets true. Then I went away to Loughborough and fancied Julia Middleton, brackets true. And I attained her, brackets false. Honestly, I was amazing that night." So,
I attained her.
I attained her.
Although I am a married man, I think you might have to explain that to me.
I think it means he had knowledge of her.
He had knowledge of her.
In the biblical sense.
In a sect.
Indeed, he penetrated her in the circle. I think that's what he means.
Okay.
I was amazing that night. I know your counting ability is severely reduced in the early hours of the morning. I lost count of the amount of orgasms she had. And then he's written in the diary, brackets, this is falser than a Groucho Marx moustache and glasses disguise. Then he finished off by saying, conversation slowly got started again. Arg. Okay, soon time to go. Catch bus, vomit. Get home, vomit again. Go upstairs, vomit again. Probably embarrassment, not alcohol induced. I sleep and I wake up without a hangover, thank God.
Excellent. Sounds like one of your nights out, to be honest.
That guy's a nutter.
He is a little bit strange. I wonder what he's doing now as well.
Well, is he still lying to himself about women that he knows he hasn't had knowledge of?
That's a bit worrying, actually.
That is a bit worrying.
Yeah, he's probably out there writing a big long book about stuff he did when he wasn't himself.
He's probably in the Labour Party.
It probably is.
He's probably a member of Parliament.
Yeah, he's probably up there in a sort of marginal, key marginal.
What do you think? Give us a sample sentence that might have appeared in the Teenage Sandy diary, then. Go on.
I reckon, had a lovely day at school today, a bit shy, my hair still won't move from its position it adopted in 1992, which, to be honest, is still pretty much the position it's in now.
It's only last week, though, because this might have been 1992.
Oh, yeah, of course. Which is somewhere between, I'd say, what's it called?
Morrissey.
Possibly. No, somewhere, I was thinking...
Shep from Blue Peter.
No, I was thinking George Orwell and Elvis. It's somewhere in between there.
George Orwell, he had like a curly, weedy
mop. Yeah, anyway, so I'd add that. Couldn't talk to girls for being chronically embarrassed by self and self-awareness issues.
I think I'll kill myself and shit the bed.
Pissed myself in maths again. brackets, not laughing. And lost my favourite rubber from my clear pencil case.
Oh no.
Went home and listened to The Smiths and cried to sleep.
James, you revealed a lot of information about yourself there, and that's really given me some insight into your psyche. And what I want to ask you after that is this.
Yes.
What kind of rubber was it?
I believe it was a white, orange-smelling W.H. Smith's Easy Eraser.
Any wear around the edges at all?
There was a little bit of rub on the top left.
Was there?
Yeah,
but not too
still,
bad.
The cardboard sleeve was still maintained.
Was it badly smudged? Oh, it was still in the cardboard sleeve?
Still maintained, yes.
In that case, I suspect it was a Staedtler eraser.
It could well have been, or it could have been Smith's own brand.
Smith's did do a particularly fine tablet eraser. It was like sort of bar of soap.
But don't use it as a bar of soap. I found that out when I borrowed one from a friend.
It's not a good solvent.
No.
Okay. Well, we've all learnt a lot there.
We have. We've learnt a lot. What about yourself? Could you give us a glimpse?
Into the pal teenage angst.
The pal past.
Was
there a lot of onanism?
Indeed, but I wouldn't have recorded that because it was my shameful secret.
And also the handwriting would have been a bit wobbly, wouldn't it?
I think I would have written something like, did really well at the Laser Zone on Friday night. Me and Russ and Taz went down. I came first. No, and Chaz.
I came first.
I went first. I won. I came third out of overall and top out of us because I'm the best and Russ is a fatty. Then I probably would have said that Villa are playing Man City this weekend. Hope we win. Heard a new Phil Collins song on the radio. Quite liked it, but also it was shit. My brother's a fat pig and he made the bathroom stink of shit the other day. God, he's a nightmare. And my mum and dad are brain dead. So anyway, I think I'll watch Knight Rider and go out on my BMX.
Do you know what I have learned so much from that insight just there?
Have you?
Yeah. I mean, you said I was quite revealing, but that I think it takes it to a new level.
Really?
Particularly the Knight Rider element.
What do you think that means?
I think deeply, on a psychological level, I think you're quite messed up, particularly around the legs.
Mm. I still do idolise David Hasselhoff to this day.
Do you?
Yeah, I got his calendar.
I did wonder about the T-shirt you were wearing.
Do you know the best thing about David Hasselhoff?
Isn't the best yet to come?
His singing.
He does have a big following, doesn't he, in Berlin or somewhere?
Germany, apparently, yeah.
Yeah, I think that is in Germany.
Are they starved of culture in Germany?
I think they might be a little bit short on it, yeah.
Anyway, we don't want to talk about Germany.
You have been listening to The Myths and Assertions of King of the Buttons. Written and presented by James Sandy and David Powell, with the godlike input of Mr. Alan Jones, and featuring David Pallett the art teacher.
All of the music that you've heard in this programme is available on the Podsafe Audio Network. You can find their website at podsafeaudio.com. There's also a cornucopic offering of photographic evidence to back up some of the weird and wonderful things mentioned in this podcast. Find the link to our Flickr account at
www.kingofthebuttons.co.uk.
Nothing wrong with that bloody coat.